Hello, I'm Helen Boucher, and here to talk about how to prepare for both certification exams and the longitudinal knowledge assessment. My disclosures are shown here. So, first and foremost, I commend you to the ABIM website. The links are shown here, and there's lots of great information that'll help you prepare. So in terms of certification, there are three options in total, right? The initial certification is the all-day exam that most of you are preparing for. Then there's maintenance certification, which comes in two flavors now. There's the every 10-year maintenance of certification or MOC exam that's now offered only once a year. So it'll be October 15th this year and October 26th next year. And then the longitudinal knowledge assessment or LKA. That began a couple of years ago now, and that's where you do questions over time. We'll talk about both. The certification exams, both the initial certification and the maintenance of certification, are one-day computer-based exams that you take in a test center. They're multiple choice, and they all look for the single best answer. So, first, for initial certification, it is 4 2-hour sessions that have up to 60 questions each. For a total of 240 questions, you'll get a running total of the time left you have remaining on your computer screen, and you'll get a pop-up telling you when you have 5 minutes left. And the whole day includes registration, a tutorial, and breaks. So it's a 10-hour day, long day. The maintenance of certification, used to be called recertification, is also 4 2-hour sessions. It is up to 220 questions, so a few less questions. It takes still about 10 hours. And it's open book. It allows up to date that is provided through the test itself. There's a separate kind of box that gets you into up to date. Turning to the newest option, longitudinal knowledge assessment. So, this is a rolling 5-year recertification where 30 questions are emailed to you every 3 months. You can answer a question in a day, or you can answer 30 questions at once. You have 5 minutes to answer each question. It's completely open book, and we'll talk more about what that means. And after you answer the question, they tell you what was correct answer and why. And to stay certified, you have to answer 100 questions a year out of a total of 120. And you also earn MOC credit for doing these questions. So after 5 years and at least 500 questions, you'll be told if you are pass, if you have a pass fail, and you will have fulfilled 100 MOC points, which is great. And there are almost 3,000 infectious disease physicians enrolled in the longitudinal knowledge assessment as of today. So, a little bit more about longitudinal knowledge assessment. The cost is included in your annual ABIM maintenance of certification fee, which is $220 for infectious disease. It's a little more if you want to keep up two certificates like internal medicine and ID. I mentioned the time requirement. It takes, an hour or two to answer the 30 questions each quarter. Again, you get up to 5 minutes a question, and there's a time bank where you can store your extra minutes, and they give you some extra minutes every year. You have to answer 100 out of 120 questions a year, and anything you open but don't answer is counted as wrong. So guessing, you always want to guess. And I mentioned open book. You can use anything. You just can't talk to anybody, but you can use books, notes, online, open evidence, AI, all fine. You have to have good laptop, wireless connection, and a display that's good enough to see pictures. And then I mentioned before, you get feedback after each question in terms of what the correct answer was and what the rationale is. And you can't go back and get the answers later. So take the time if you want to understand right after you answer the question. You get a quarterly score and you get a sense of where you are compared to the group, but you don't get an official pass fail till the end of 5 years. This is just telling you the dates to sign up for the longitudinal knowledge assessment. The questions come in quarterly installments, right? So you can see they're due March 31st, June 30th, September 30th, December 31. And you really should start early so that you don't have your questions expire as yours truly did. So this is the little dashboard that gives you your progress for the longitudinal assessment. And you can see on the left, it tells you where you are in your cycle of questions, how you're doing this quarter. And you can see on the right your time bank and sort of the break you get for missing questions. You get to miss up to 100 questions over five, to skip up to 100 questions over 5 years. The website is shown here if you want to know more about longitudinal knowledge assessment. All right, so now let's turn to the exams. So whether it's initial certification or maintenance certification, these are computer-based exams that look for a single best answer. And the way it works is you do sections of up to 60 questions, and you can change any answer in that section until it's over. So I suggest noting the questions that you're unsure of and going back and reviewing them at the end. And really important to remember that about 20% of the questions don't count. They're new questions being pretested. You have so about a little less than 2 minutes a question, and unanswered questions are wrong. So guess if you don't know, and make sure you read the whole question because there are often important clinical details in these questions. And then remember, if something seems ambiguous or there are two correct answers, you could be right. This could be a pretest question, and you don't want to get bogged down. So give it your best answer and don't fret. There are breaks throughout the day. They're optional. I really recommend taking them because it's a long day. You have three different breaks for up to 100 minutes, and it's after each of the first three test sessions. And you can use your break time however you'd like. You can use some or all of it. And then they just keep track of how much you have left after each break that you take. So if you take 10 minutes after the first session, then you have 90 minutes left, for example. There are proctors monitoring everything, the test room, the locker room, the area you walk in. In terms of signing up for the test, you'll get an email that tells you your appointment time, the location, how to get there. I recommend checking out the site before the exam. Exactly where is it? Where will you park? Where will you eat? Get there about a half hour early. Each testing center has 8 to 25 workstations, so a little variation there, but not too big. There's an administrator present. At the beginning of the exam, you'll go through some instructions and you'll take a pledge of honesty. You need to have two types of ID. They need to be government-issued IDs with photos and signature, like a driver's license, a passport, and another form of ID with a signature or a photo, like a credit card, an ATM card. You can't bring an expired ID, and you will be put through a number of security measures, wanding, scans. They'll take your picture and make you sign. So when you get there, you'll get a short orientation and they'll take you right to your computer workstation. You can ask for a left-handed mouse. You can adjust the height and some features of your computer. They give you erasable notepads and you can save little notes in a pop-up box. And they'll give you earplugs or headphones, but you can't bring your own. And if anything goes wrong and you need help, raise your hand, don't get up. They will take your fingerprints electronically every time you enter and leave the testing room. And so when you come back from a break, allow at least 10 minutes for that check-in. So for disabled test takers, the ABIM complies with the Americans with Disability Act, and they'll make reasonable modifications. And you need to request these accommodations. And there's forms on the ABIM website. So what's not allowed? They give you a locker for things like your cell phone, your pager, calculators, watch, wallet, purse, et cetera. Clothing. You can bring a small sweater, but not, you can't bring a jacket or a coat in. You can't bring any books. If you have medications, you need to get prior approval. And food and drink you can bring and leave in your locker for your breaks, but there's usually no refrigeration. So just bring a refrigerated pack if you need it. So if you have questions about the exam day, here's the website and the phone number for ABIM with the hours. So the tutorial, there's a web link here to the tutorial, and I recommend you take it. It gets you familiar with the sort of computer environment and some of the idiosyncrasies of how the questions look and how you access media and things like that. So as I said, this is mostly multiple choice questions, actually all multiple choice questions with a single best answer. Most of them are focused on patient scenarios and they ask about sort of diagnosis and treatment, right? They tell you about what's being done and they say, what's the next test to get to a diagnosis? Or what's the best treatment for this? Or what's the patient's risk? Or what's the cause of this disease? Getting at whether we understand pathophysiology or the basic science. And they do that in ways that are clinically relevant. About 75% of the questions are case presentations, and they really are not trying to trick you. They give us normal lab values. Pediatric questions are very unlikely. There's very little basic science, including very little about mechanisms of resistance, for example, and very little microbiology, but when they give it, it's usually a clue, right? So it might be things you could do to help in the lab, like oil on media for a lipophilic yeast, or iron and 30% incubation for Mycobacterium haemophilum. So how is the content of the exam determined? There is this thing called the blueprint. And in that blueprint, the medical categories are broken down into different categories, as we can see here. And then you can also see the relative frequency of questions from these categories. So not surprisingly, the biggest category is bacterial diseases, over a quarter of the questions. And you can see going down all the way down to general medicine, critical care, and surgery. And that's 18% of the exam. And I think that's important to point out, right? All these other things that you would expect, viral diseases, fungi, immunocompromised hosts, are in small proportion. But infectious disease docs need to understand mimics, and we're all internal medicine docs. And so there are a substantial proportion of questions on critical care, surgery, and other internal medicine. Questions focus on clinical syndromes like those shown here, everything from, lung infections, HIV, GI and intra-abdominal infections, skin and soft tissue, bone and joint, all the things we treat in infectious disease, including prosthetic joint infections, as shown here, sexually transmitted infections, fever, et cetera. The exam also looks at special patient populations, including immunocompromised patients like those with leukemia, lymphoma, or who have neutropenia, infections following transplantation, HIV and other immunocompromised, pregnant women, travelers, and immigrants. There's a detailed list on the website that gets into the subgroups of the blueprint, and I would suggest that you spend a few minutes looking at that just to get familiar, but I'll show you an example here. So rickettsia make up 2.5% of the exam. That's not a lot. And it's broken down into all these different kinds of rickettsia, right? Rocky Mountain spotted fever, typhus, et cetera. So good to be familiar with this. And certainly when you hear the lecture this week, it puts it into perspective that overall rickettsia is pretty small, and it's going to be divided among a lot of types of rickettsia. How are the questions developed? They are developed over years, and it takes a few years for questions to show up on an exam and to count. So, new developments that happened in the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years, are less likely to be on the exam and to count. So, something like H5N1 bird flu is less likely. Other things that were hot and are now not hot are also unlikely to appear, like anthrax. And the test writers do a lot of work to avoid so-called lookup questions, right? So they want us to know about the treatment of malaria because it's important, common, and deadly, but they are not going to want us to know the treatment of filariasis. That would be considered a lookup. Luckily, our colleagues in infectious disease do quite well. This is the first time pass rate on the initial certification exam going back to 2011. And you can see that virtually every year the pass rates are above 186%. But almost all in the 90s and in the high 90s. Last year, a little bit lower at 93%. And here's a link to the website. So, turning to the maintenance of certification exam, the same blueprint is used, but a new lens is applied to the blueprint. So, the expectation is that by the time you get to 10 years out, the infectious disease physician needs to be more familiar with the more common infectious disease problems. So the blueprint was rated by reviewers who looked at a couple of criteria: the frequency of infection and the importance of an infection. And they used a 3-point scale for low, medium, and high. And then they said that for the maintenance of certification exam, questions would be compiled into the exam according to those ratings. So at least 70% of questions on the MOC will address high importance content. And no more than 30% of the questions will address medium important content. And no exam questions would address low importance content. And then, separate from that, no more than 15% of the questions will address low frequency content. So, all in all, they want us to focus on the most important and the most frequent infections as we're thinking about maintenance of certification. And you can see how that looks on this heat map, right? So Here you can see the colors for high relevance, medium, and low, the sort of darker to lighter, and then the frequency as well. So, for example, if we look at Staph aureus, right, it's high relevance for diagnosis of Staph, treatment of Staph, risk assessment, and pathophysiology, right? We should all know about Staph aureus. But if you come down to the bottom and look at Carinobacterium, less relevant, and the pathophysiology of Carinobacterium is felt to be of low relevance, so not likely to see it on the test. And the link here will take you through the whole blueprint according to high, medium, and low relevance. So here are the pass rates for the MOC exam going from 2015 to 2023. The 24 and 25 have not been published yet. But you can see here that the maintenance certification pass rates are high, in the high 80s and low 90s. What do I recommend that you do from now to the exam? Start early, and coming to this course is a great way to start early. Make some notes of the items that you want to review in the few days prior to the exam. Again, this board review course is excellent preparation. Use the questions on the website to identify areas where you need to study further. Go to the ABIM website and look, take the tutorial, read about the exam day, and see the details about the exam that you will take. It's well worth a half an hour to do that ahead of time. Make a little folder or binder with the key things that you want to pull out and study again over the last few days, you know, parasites, fungi, infectious disease, mimic syndromes. So the things that are not as front and center of your mind that you could study in the day or two before the exam. With that, I'm going to wish you all good luck and hope that you enjoy the course. Thanks so much.